Hello and welcome to the Welsh Rugby Podcast. I'm Ben James. I'm here deep in the depths of the Principality Stadium. We are fast approaching kick-out time. As we speak, we are currently watching Ireland just about get over the line in the Six Nations title race. But of course, the story here today in Cardiff is that Wales have lost to Italy and have ended up finishing bottom of the 2024 Six Nations with the wooden spoon. I'm joined by the Times writer Elgan Alderman, possibly the most positive man, I think, on the Welsh rugby beat. And I think that's probably the best way of going about it, because it's quite a sullen day here in Cardiff, isn't it?
The self-appointed morale monitor. Yes, it's, well, 21 years since the last wooden spoon. I was a nine-year-old boy when that happened. And at the time, it was not that surprising when Wales would do... I mean, it wasn't a regular thing that they would get the wooden spoon, but even so, that time in the 90s and even early noughties, you know, there was just much less expectation around Wales. But given the Grand Slams that have come 5, 8, 12, 19, to be back towards that stage where, you know, losing to Italy at home and it didn't even really feel like an upset, and certainly off what happened on the field, a three-point defeat benefited Wales based off what how just poor they were for so many moments of that game.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, a wooden spoon it's not a surprise based on where we are in Welsh rugby, and we've lost count of the amount of times we said we are where we are, but at the end of the day, they finished fifth in three out of the last four Six Nations before this. I mean, the other one they won, which just goes to show the boom or bust nature, but a wooden spoon is not a surprise. I think what was a surprise today was the manner of defeat. You know, Italy... You know, there was a point where I think people were sort of Googling when was the last time Wales were nilled at home, which is a long time ago. I think Wembley was the last time, wasn't it?
France 51-0 by the Grand Slam winning France team in 98.
Yeah, I think the last time they were nilled in Cardiff, you're talking back at the Arms Park when it was a 3-0 defeat to Ireland, and I don't quite know when that was.
And even though Wales have ended up outscoring Italy and Scotland in terms of tries in the match, in those matches that bookended the championship, nil at half time in both games, which tells a story of in two matches they've just started so abysmally and eventually got better and left it too late.
Yeah, it was just a horrendous performance, wasn't it? I think there's no other way around it. It was just the Scotland first half was bad, but this was worse. Just that first 40 minutes. I think Italy are a good team, and I think they showed the progress, but there was a lot of points today where Italy were actually really sloppy because they didn't need to be brilliant. And yeah,
what was just so different between the teams is that, especially in that first half, when Wales were attacking and passing the ball on the line, they just looked like they didn't know where they should be. People were getting in each other's way. They were knocking on. And you compare that with Italy throughout the tournament, they've just run beautiful, crisp lines, pullback passes. When they've made line breaks, they've scored from them. And, you know, Lorenzo Pani's try today was a prime example. It was just a lovely, flowing, crisp backs move that put Montioani free, and then Lorenzo Pani was able to score. And so just in those moments, you just see one team that was just completely hot on detail and executing skills and running their patterns out wide. Whereas for Wales, it was, oh, Adam Beard just got Nick Tompkins' way. Oh, Nick Tompkins has had to run back inside. And they just didn't seem to know what they were doing and where they were supposed to be going.
It's funny because, I mean, the centres have become a sort of topic of conversation in the last couple of weeks when it felt like, you know, certainly in France in the World Cup, it was settled. Now, you know, we've had changes. Owen Watkin came in last week with Joe Roberts. Then it was back to Nick Tompkins and George North. Obviously, North's retiring, and this was the worst possible way, I think, to go out of the international game for a player of his stature and what he's achieved. But even the things that we thought we'd managed to sort of solve in the last year, like the centre combinations that Wayne Pivak tried so many, we're sort of back to square one now because, I don't know, fundamentally, it looks like Sam Costello and Nick Tompkins have never met, let alone played rugby together. It's just they're sort of working on different wavelengths. And the amount of times there was just Wales overplaying in their own half and throwing on hostile passes and bad ball. And everyone's just going against the grain. And there was no sort of method to any of it, was there? And, you know, Italy in the second half probably overplayed a little bit their own half, but they had an 18-0 lead at that point. So you can forgive it for almost being in uncharted waters. Whereas, yeah, it's just Wales was so bad.
Yeah, I mean, on the centres, you'd have to say after what happened today that Mason Grady will have to be considered at 12 now, because everyone's been saying, oh, Warren Bull's dead, the Jamie Roberts classic inside centre, that'll never happen again. But today, playing at 12, where, you know, he's not doesn't not hasn't played there for Wales, his best performance for Wales has been as a replacement flanker in a World Cup warm-up game. So I think a lot of people have been waiting to see just his great speed and size have a big impact on a game in the centres. And today it actually happened seemingly at inside centre coming on, where he did get Wales over the gain line. He scored the last of the consolation tries. Yes, he, you know, the first thing he did in the match was knock on a crash ball and then immediately give a penalty away. So it wasn't a great start, but thereafter he did get Wales over the gain line. So suddenly, after talking about the carousel of centres, you have to now think that we're considering someone who has never played inside centre for Wales may now be the one to give a, to have a crack at Twickenham on June 22nd.
Oh, God. Yeah, it doesn't get any easier, does it, with the Springboks in Australia around the corner. And you know, it's funny because I remember there was a press conference earlier in the tournament where I think Gatlin said it jokingly, but it's probably going to turn out to be true now. He said, oh, we can't play Warren Bull because we've got Nick Tompkins. And he sort of, you know, was almost saying it ruefully but sarcastically, but it's now looking like that's going to be the case. It probably is going to be the case that actually, do you know what? I've got someone I can play Warren Ball with now. I know he hates that term.
Someone who's 6'4" or 6'5" at 12 and then a left footer at 13, perhaps in Jay Roberts. Where have we seen that before under Warren Gatland?
Well, yeah, it's just Jay Roberts this time is the left footer who can kick.
Different Jay Roberts.
I mean, speaking of Gatland, that's the thing we've probably got to address, is the fact that, you know, this puts pressure on him. In theory, it puts pressure on him because, you know, this is a Six Nations clean sweeper defeat, a wooden spoon, first since 2003, as you say.
14 defeats in the past 16 Six Nations matches.
Yeah, like an awful record across the board and just, you know, the pressure that's building within Welsh rugby. But it doesn't feel like anything's going to happen. You know, and he offered to resign, basically, is what we're told. That's what he told us after the match. He went up to the new WRU CEO, Abby Tierney, and said he'd offered to resign, and she said, hell no, which I don't know if that's how she speaks, but it would appear that's how she speaks. So, yeah, his position seems safe, which then begs the question, where do we go from here?
Well, can't go down, you'd like to think.
Because that's the other point you made.
Can't go down, you'd like to think. Can't go any lower.
Yeah, because he said, we're not in the doldrums, which was obviously his famous quote from 5 years ago.
He said, but then he did say, probably rock bottom.
Which is technically worse, I think.
I need to get the dictionary out and compare the difference between rock bottom and doldrums.
It's nice to laugh about these things because Welsh rugby is just in a perilous state.
I think the reality of where we are now is, for the past 2 years or so, people have thought that it might come to this, but I think people never really thought it would come to a wooden spoon. And yes, you look back on the tournament and they could have won two or three games, even with everything that's going on. That second half comeback against Scotland where they lose by one, they're leading against England until the 70th minute. You know, in the end, they got stuffed by France at home, but they're leading in that game until the 65th minute. There was one stage in the Ireland game where they, if they'd showed a bit more composure, it could have been, you know, 17-14 with 15 minutes to go. So there have been moments throughout this tournament, even with a wooden spoon, where they haven't actually that been far off. It's just, there just seems to be so much lacking in detail and, you know, the skill levels were poor today. Getting over the gain line, there's just so many clear, inherently physical things and in terms of coaching that they just struggled with. And, you know, you can't say they don't deserve five defeats. At the same time as saying they were close to winning a few games, you also can't say this is anything different to what Wales actually deserve from how the tournament's gone.
No, and exactly. And I think there has been this narrative around Wales, hasn't there, in the tournament, where they're building for an indeterminate point in the future where this team will be good. And that's great, that's fine. But you do worry that, one, Are the foundations they're building upon in Welsh rugby going to be there? Or are we just building it on sand? And also, you know, Gatlin talks about players coming from the regions and having that losing mentality. Well, we're literally a wooden spoon with no wins. Like, the losing mentality is at Test rugby level as much as it is at regional. And that's the fear, isn't it?
As I just said, 14 defeats in 16 Six Nations games. That's since having a Grand Slam decider.
Yeah.
We've witnessed a 3-point win against Scotland in Cardiff when basically Pivak sort of went back to a Warren ball because he needed a win. And then the win in Rome last year when Reese Webb came in. And that's it for three editions of the Six Nations.
You know, the World Cup's always sort of an anomaly because of the conditions of it in terms of almost being like a club side, which Gatland loves, that sort of preparation time. But it's a difficult one to question the narrative that Gatland's created, because at the end of the day, you know, saying, well, we're building for some point in the future, so you can't judge him on these results in a way, but you can almost question the method and whether it's the right way of doing it. And he has probably made rods for his back. Today, I think today's the first day that he's actually admitted he's made a mistake in this whole tournament. He's pointed the finger at people at times, you know, the regions got it a few weeks ago. Other people have had it. You know, Alex Mann still got tyre tracks on his back, if we're being honest, in terms of the comments that he had supposedly made. Today's the first time I think Gatland's actually made an admission of a mistake, where he basically said that maybe some of the messaging to the players was a bit overcomplicated and they want to simplify things in terms of how they stay in matches, because they have been playing, in all five games, I think, they've been playing like a team that is so lacking in game management. And I think part of that comes down to the narrative around them, where there's a lack of pressure. It's like, it doesn't matter. So, yeah, if you want to try run it out of your own 22, you know, go for it. Don't kick for territory or take penalties, just because nothing matters. And I think that's where they've got to. And then it becomes a problem when you get to the final game and suddenly you actually need to play Test match rugby to win it. It's not a fun podcast, is it?
You've given me the intro as the morale monitor, and now you've deflated me entirely there. Here I am suggesting they could have won in Dublin. Here I am suggesting that, and now I'm deflating.
Well, the fans didn't seem overly disappointed. I mean, that's a tough thing to sort of say, but it was a weird ending to the game, wasn't it? Like, the players. You know, we've seen defeats before where literally the players are on their haunches and everyone looks gutted. And you know that sometimes that's big tests, you know, World Cup quarterfinals, semifinals, etc., Lions, series, deciders. It wasn't that. It didn't look like it was the end of the world. And that's not saying that in a bad thing, like it should have meant more, but I think maybe the players feel that this is the start rather than the end.
It's a two-sided coin, isn't it? Because on the one hand, you are happy that, you know, the crowd didn't boo them or things like that. Like, the crowd did seem sort of jovial at the end of the Scotland game, which obviously kind of felt like a win. Yeah. At the end of today, scoring two late tries, by and large, you know, the crowd stayed on their side. 72,000 came today, so it wasn't quite a sellout, but it was not a bad crowd for a, you know, Saturday Six Nations game. But equally, you could say that the fact that it doesn't seem that negative after they've just lost convincingly, really, to Italy at home and had a wooden spoon, and yet it was so baked into people's expectations that they don't feel that deflated. So, yes, there's two sides to that coin, isn't there?
There is. I think we are going to have to wrap it up now. I think we are probably going to get the shepherd's crook in a sec, but
good. I've run out of things to say.
Me too. I think that's been a weird trend in the Six Nations, that you end every game not really sure what
we're
you
getting
can.
The thumbs up.
Not
we're
really sure.
Hooked.
What, you don't know what you can say about this Wales team, because what you can't really judge it. And I think that's been the hardest part of this campaign, is knowing what to say. But thankfully, we resorted to not singing, which is a decent thing. I think maybe people would admit.
Will the song will be back in Welsh rugby once they've, you know, lost to Twickenham, lost twice to Australia, but then beaten Queensland Reds in July.
I mean, we all
look
can't
forward to that. Wales versus Queensland Reds.
We all can't wait for that one. Nothing like a midweek game at the end of a tour, is there? On a Friday. And on that note, I think that sums up Welsh rugby as much as anything at the minute. We will be back later in the week with a more in-depth podcast, probably looking at things a bit more, well, focused and less scatterbrained is probably the best way of putting it. This is a bit more of a reactionary pod, just to sort of cover Wales' first wooden spoon in 21 years. But if you have enjoyed the podcast, do make sure to subscribe and leave a review. It really does help us out. But until the next one, goodbye.